And there we go. Coming up still is you, Catherine, on the big thing. So it might just be recording you. I'm not sure visually, but let's hope it doesn't. Okay, so let's go. This is going to be such a great topic for us to consider today. And I'm excited to be doing it. And also because, I wanted to make this celebrating and reclaiming menopause month, and so it fits in because menopause is like not just that little bit of that happens in the middle of our life. It's affects us significantly for the rest of our life. I just want to introduce Nikki Delglin. Now I'm going to say a little bit about her to give you some idea, and the I have sent out her bio to give you a longer description. But Nikki is a modern medicine woman. She's a doctor of and Nikki, I tried to look this up and I couldn't find out what it meant. What does
Yeah,
that stand for?
it's the short word, it's the acronym for osteomyologist. So we study muscle and bone, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. So she's a doctor of muscle and bone, and she calls herself a modern day alchemist because what she does is she brings together her 35 years of working in sports medicine, and she brings that to holistic principles to work with women from postnatal to postmenopause to really help us understand about especially our pelvic areas. She specializes in pelvic floor, back, and injury rehabilitation. And one thing that really, just leapt out from her little bio that she sent me was that actually she had her personal journey included overcoming paralysis from the waist down, and that is actually what propelled her into this journey to becoming the doctor that she is. She's based in the UK in sunny Suffolk, and we're going to be talking about nurturing our core pelvic wellness for wise women. Wow. So, welcome, Nikki, first of all.
Hello. Hi, everyone. It's nice to see you all. Hi.
So what we're going to do, as usual, is we're going to have I'm going to ask Nikki about the topic that she's come to share with us, and then we'll go into a bigger discussion. I think this is such a good topic because, my experience and the more that I've gone into, researching for the Magnificent Menopause Summit that's happening at the end of the month, is that a lot of us, we get really complacent. Like once we've gone through menopause, it's like, oh yeah, I've done that. That's finished. Thank goodness. And then we just kind of sink into the rest of our life, whatever that's going to be. And then we might get surprises about, different issues around our pelvic health, but we don't connect it to menopause, perhaps, or we just feel like, oh, this is just what happens when you get old. And so I really think this is such a great topic for us, and I think a great place to start is I wonder if you could just share with us some of the common pelvic health issues that we do face as we age, because I think naming them and putting them out there can really help us rather than us just, thinking, oh, well, maybe something will happen. I don't know, hope not, but maybe it will, and I'll deal with it as it comes along. But as we age, there are some common issues that can arise. So let's start there.
Okay. Well, you're quite right. I think it's one of those things that has been pelvic health is something that affects not only postmenopausal women, women going through menopause, but it's actually starting to affect younger women as well. So when I deal holistically with women, what I'm trying to do is we're trying to get it out there for the young women, because as they age, hopefully then they'll have more of an understanding of what to do and how to look after their pelvic floor. So if we start with ladies who may be within the group who are perimenopausal or who are postmenopausal, the things that start to happen are the main one is incontinence. So with incontinence, that could be, there are several different types of incontinence, and I'll go through those really quickly, because if a lady presents to her doctor or her medical practitioner or whoever looks after her health, they might come out with these words. So the main ones are urge incontinence and stress incontinence. So urge incontinence is the one that, I don't know if you ladies have found this, but I know I certainly did, is you're okay until you drive up to your front door, you run to the door, put your key in, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I need to go for a wee. So that's the sort of thing that urge incontinence is. It's that sudden urge that comes out of nowhere, that tells you that you need to go for a wee. The other one is stress incontinence. And stress incontinence is one that happens to us if we sneeze or we laugh. So a lot of women, as we do age, we'll find that if they're laughing a lot, they might wet themselves, or they might have a little trickle, you know, those kind of things. They're classed as stress incontinence. Then we've got something called mixed incontinence, which is a combination of both of those. So that will be, that could be something that you have due to going through menopause, or it might be something that's happened if you've had a vaginal birth, for instance. So what I'll try and do throughout the course of our conversation is, if I bring it back into what I see with my postmenopausal ladies in clinic and how I deal with them and the symptoms that they have, hopefully that'll help your ladies. So that's mixed incontinence. We've got something called overflow incontinence. It tends to happen more in men than it does in women. And that's where we go to the toilet, we empty our bladder, but we don't empty it fully, so that we have a little bit left, a residual level of urine. And over the time that of the day, it can increase until, you know, we then find that we have a leakage due to maybe a pelvic floor dysfunction that's going on, or a weakness. We have functional urinary incontinence, which is something that happens to us as we get older. And literally that is a functional one, is that we can't get to the toilet quick enough. So, you know, so I find that with my very old, so if I've got my elders in clinic, and I'm talking about late 70s, 80s, 90s, they're the ones that say to me, oh, I try so hard and yet I can't quite get to the toilet in time. So that's functional urinary incontinence. We've got neurological bladder. Neurological bladder is something that happens if we've got a nerve damage of some kind. Now, this is something that I found, you mentioned that I had paralysis from the waist down. So I lost bowel and bladder control. Luckily for me, I managed to regain that, and that was through my rehabilitation that I went through. But occasionally I do have a little bit of neurological bladder goes on, especially if my back starts to play up. So that's with damage to the nervous system. That could be caused by an accident such as mine, MS, muscular sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, or stroke. Then you've got, and I never get this right, post-matriculation dribble. So that is where we go to the toilet, we get up, and you put your knickers on, and then you get an extra dribble at the end. So that's it. So those are the sort of words that might come out if you're talking to a doctor, physical therapist, or somebody who's looking after your health, for instance. So those are the incontinence. The main one that women suffer from, especially postmenopause, are the urge incontinence and the stress incontinence. And all of those incontinence issues, we can actually rectify them either completely, or we can get ladies better. So we can improve their symptoms by doing specific exercises and rehab programs. I've worked at it myself and I know that it works, and I'm working with other ladies as well, so that we can increase their control of their pelvic floor. So does that answer your question? We can go into further details if you want, because there's one other. We've got the incontinence side, but then we've got prolapse. And I know that that was something that you mentioned. So prolapses are known in the physical therapy world or the medical world as a POP. And that's a pelvic organ prolapse. So the acronym for it is POP. So we call it a POP. And There are several types. And what a prolapse is when the pelvic organs shift down. So if you can imagine, I've got a little diagram here. I don't know if the ladies can see. So the red band here, that's the pelvic floor. Now, with the female anatomy is fabulous, because if you think about it, inside our pelvis, we've got all of these organs, and we've got our spine, the bowel, the uterus, and then the bladder, the urethra, and the pubic bone. So the pelvic floor attaches to the from the pubic bone to the coccyx, which is at the lower part of the spine. Now, what happens with a pelvic organ prolapse? If the pelvic floor is dysfunctional, it's weak, usually when it's weak, those organs can slip down. So it means that we have a slight bulge in whatever area of the sexual organs there are. And I can go into that with you. So the prolapses that we have are, and again, it can go really, really complicated. Again, I'm going to keep it simple. So we have an anterior bladder or an anterior bulge or pelvic organ prolapse, and that's known as a cystocele. And that's where the bladder bulges down into the vaginal cavity. That is the most frequent prolapse that a woman will have. And then we've got a rectocele, which is a posterior. So a rectocele is where the rectum comes down, and that bulges into the vaginal area as well. We then have a uterine prolapse, which is where the womb actually passes down into the vaginal cavity. But the most frequent one for a woman is a cystocele, which is where the bladder actually falls down and presses into the vaginal cavity. And that's the one that causes women more problems than any of them. Although in clinic, I see ladies with all sorts of issues around their incontinence and their pelvic floor health. So those are the ones that, like I said, most women will, one in three women suffer from a pelvic organ problem. So it's quite frequently found, but it doesn't have to be. Like I said, there's lots of rehabilitation exercises and work that we can do to help ladies overcome that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been normalized, unfortunately. We see adverts for Tena Lady and other products. And although it's common, it's not normal. And that's what I say to my ladies who come into clinic. Now, I absolutely understand where you're coming from. It is common, but it's not normal for us to feel like this. And that's where we usually start our discussion of where to go from here. What can we do to help ourselves?
Wow, that's so interesting. I never knew there were so many different ways that we could have incontinence.
Absolutely.
That's really amazing. And I really appreciate that you make that clear distinction, that it's common but not normal to be to be suffering from those things. And gosh, if I even think about my grandmother, so, you know, that was so long ago, born in 18 something or other. And when she was old, you know, my mother would make a joke about her incontinence. And now my mother is old. It's not a joke, but it's still something that, you know, we don't talk about very much. And if I mention it to my mother, she says, "No, what do you think? You think I can't even go to the toilet?" And it's like it's for a lot of people, it was taboo. And like, I think we have just normalized it instead of actually talking about it honestly. Before we go into anything else, I really wonder if you could just share a little bit about how menopause actually impacts these different elements, because this is, you know, this is Reclaiming Menopause Month, and I just feel that there must be some connection there going on.
There is actually, yes. As we go through, as your ladies will learn from all those wonderful speakers you've got coming up at the end of the month, the one thing that they will go through, and I think everyone will at some point in their speak, is talk about the fluctuations in the hormones, the female hormones, as we go in through menopause. So as we transition through from, and I like to call it the sort of the second spring. So as we're transitioning through from perimenopause through to postmenopause, those estrogen and progesterone levels fluctuate quite a lot. Yeah. So with regards to estrogen, if we think of estrogen as the hormone that keeps everything really spongy and all our ligaments working, all the tendons working, keeping, my tutor used to say, keep everything juicy. That used to make me cringe, but it does. It keeps everything sort of in place. And what happens is, as we go through postmenopause, we lose that that lovely lubricating effect of estrogen throughout the whole of our body. So we have tensile decreases in all of the tendons, all of the ligaments and the muscles. And if you think about it, the pelvic floor is actually a muscle, and it's attached at both ends of the pelvis. Yeah. So the decrease in the estrogen can mean that those ligaments and also the muscle itself can become weak. And one of the things that we do in fitness classes, for instance, and my rehab with women, is we continue to do exercises to build muscle. So what we need to do is do exercises for the pelvic floor as well, because those fluctuations in estrogens and the lower levels of estrogen can cause issues. And like I said, one in three women are affected by incontinence. So that's just an indication of how the levels of estrogen can actually affect a woman. But that's basically what happens as we go through menopause, is that with the fluctuations and lower estrogen levels, it has a knock-on effect for everywhere in the body, including the pelvic floor.
Okay. I have a question also about when you showed the diagram of the pelvic floor there, connected to those two bones, and I just thought, as we age, we tend to sit more.
Yes.
You know, we sit, and so I was thinking, those bones, how are they, you know, it seems to me they need to be working a lot, and as we sit, we are not working them, and I wondered if that has any impact as well upon our pelvic health.
Yes, it does. And it not only affects women, but it affects men as well. And we see in society today that a lot of people are more sedentary. So we're sitting down an awful lot, as you said. We're driving cars, we're sitting at our desks a lot longer. We sit down and we watch the television. So anatomically, what happens is if we look at the pelvis and all of the other structures that actually come into the pelvis, such as the thigh. There's a ligament, a tendon that comes up, which is called the hip flexor. So the hip flexors get tight. If your hip flexors get tight, then that stops the mobility in the hips, and that can affect the way that the pelvic floor will work. Also, sitting down, and if you fall down on the coccyx, yeah, the pressure on the coccyx, that can cause tension in part of the pelvic floor. So all of those structures do rely on us to be mobile as much as possible. So sitting is, they say sitting is the new, what is it, the new heart disease or something, or the new killer or something, because it is. Yes, everything shortens when we sit, and it can cause back issues as well as pelvic floor issues as well. So I advocate to everybody to get out there, do as much walking as you can, be as active as you can, and do some really good stretching routines and mobility routines, especially as we get in older. Yeah.
So what kind of signs and symptoms really should we be aware of as we're well, that, and also I wondered about what's it called, cystitis and things like that, because this seems to be something that increases as we get old, can increase as we get old. And I wondered, when you were talking about the prolapse of the bladder, for example, or of the colon, if that was going to be impactful upon, you know, urinary tract infections.
There's a big correlation between pelvic floor dysfunction and urinary tract infections, certainly. There's lots of literature out there now that suggests that there is a definite correlation with it. So if a lady comes in to me with symptoms of a UTI, I'll call it a UTI because I usually use that in clinic. So if she comes in with a recurrent UTI, 9 times out of 10 should be put on medication by a doctor. So I always question whether or not there's a pelvic floor dysfunction. And usually if I go in and I do a palpation of the coccyx, I find that her pelvic floor is actually too tight. So she's got an overactive pelvic floor as opposed to an underactive pelvic floor. So if we can get the lady at the right time before she goes on medication time after time after time, we can start to decrease the symptoms of a UTI, for instance. There are obviously lots of other reasons why women get UTIs. One of those is not wiping themselves properly, which is why we always say if you go to the toilet, you always wipe from front to back so that you don't increase the amount of bacteria that might enter into the vaginal cavity. So, but pelvic floor, definitely, if it's too tight, it can cause a UTI, and that can be recurrent as well. And it's very interesting that when you do work with women and you assess their anxiety levels, that's a really good indicator as to whether or not they could be suffering from pelvic floor dysfunction. So can I go off piste a little bit
here? Yes, do, yeah.
So if a lady comes in to see me and she's got a variety of symptoms, and I'm suspecting that there is a possible pelvic floor dysfunction going on, the first thing that I do is do a full assessment. So like I said, I tend to work holistically, and I always, when I'm going through their medical history, I want to know what's happened to them in the build up to their menopause, and then how their menopause has progressed into postmenopause. And it's phenomenal the amount of women who have had some kind of trauma. They've been abused. They've got all of that, sort of the psychological and anxiety levels are very high. And we suppress them throughout our lives. We just get on with life and we have children, we get married, we have families, etc. And we suppress, we suppress, we suppress. And then as soon as we hit menopause, something just switches and everything just goes up in the air. And the ladies will learn this when you are speaking with your other speakers at the end of the month, is that this allostatic load just hits the fan. And it is a case of, I can't cope, I don't know what's going on. That anxiety can exacerbate pelvic floor issues in women, for sure. So it is always something that I do look at with my ladies, is just finding out a little bit more about them, about their history, why they could be suffering the symptoms that they are. And then the protocol that I would use would be different to what I would do or previously with men, is very much working on their mental anguish, their anxiety levels, because we know anxiety can cause that pelvic floor to actually start to become very, very tight and give us issues, which are very unpleasant. And and then I put them on a proper rehabilitation program where we look at them 360 degrees. So we might be looking at spiritual guidance, tapping into that, tapping into their mental health, tapping into their physical health, tapping into trying to get them to focus on their second phase of their life, which is postmenopause, where they want to be, who they are, and getting them to really just come into themselves and say, well, who am I? Is this me? Where do I want to be going into the future? So, so it's sort of, I work, like I said, when I'm working with women, it's not just here you are, here's a set of symptoms, this is your program. I'm looking at every angle that they, that quite possibly could cause them the issues that they have.
That is so lovely. And what I really loved about what you said was this idea, or this moving into this second part of our life, this postmenopausal period, and really, like who you said, who do you want to be? And really connecting that into, all of our pelvic areas. I love that. I was going to say down below bits. Which just goes to highlight the whole issue that, we're not familiar with talking about these parts of our body or what might be going on for us. And yes, I love this, bringing it to the center of, this postmenopausal part of our life. I really love that. So I know you've got so much to share with people, and I know that you, let me just, I just want to check what you've said here, alternative therapies to support wellness and how we can prevent issues or what to look for, a whole load of different things that might come up. And I want to open it out to the group now, really, so that people can ask you questions, maybe about, what you do or whatever's coming up for them, because this is such an opportunity to really speak to somebody who knows about this. And maybe also, maybe we'll have time to address when people do have those tightened pelvic floor, because I've seen this come up as an issue. I saw it on a Substack issue, actually. And maybe we'll come to that as well.